ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। राजकभायां निर्णां मन्यमाना महर्षया देहं ममान्धु स्मानि मे कुमारा समजायत। Thereafter, to save the people from the danger of an unregulated government, the sages churned Maharaj Nimi's material body, from which, as a result, a son was born. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Arajaka bhayam, if the government is unsteady and unregulated, there is danger for fear for the people. At the present moment, this danger always exists because the government by the people. Here we can see that the great sages got a son from Nimi's material body to guide the citizens properly, for such guidance is the duty of a Kshatriya king. A Kshatriya is one who saves the citizens from being injured. In the so-called people's government, there is no trained Kshatriya king. As soon as someone strong accumulates votes, he becomes the minister or president, without training from the learned Brahmins expert in the Shastras. Indeed, we see that in some countries the government changes from party to party, and therefore the men in charge of the government are more eager to protect their position than to see that the citizens are happy. The Vedic civilization prefers monarchy. People like the government of Lord Ramchandra, the government of Maharaj Yudhisthira, and the government of Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Ambarish, and Maharaj Prahlad. There are many instances of excellent government under a monarch. Gradually, the democratic government is becoming unfit for the needs of the people, and therefore some parties are trying to elect a dictator. A dictatorship is the same as a monarchy, but without a trained leader. Actually, people will be happy when a trained leader, whether a monarch or dictator, takes control of the government and rules the people according to the standard regulations of the authorized scriptures. Janmana jinakaso bhud vaidehastu videhaja mitalo mathannaj jato mitala jena nirmita. Because he was born in an unusual way, the son was called Janak. And because he was born from the dead body of his father, he is also known as Vaideha. Because he was born from the churning of his father's material body, he is known as Mitala. And because he constructed a city as King Mitala, the city is known as Mitala. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmoy Sri Guruve Nama. Thereafter, to save the people from the danger of an unregulated government, the sages churned Maharaja's Nimi's material body, from which, as a result, a son was born. Srila Prabhupada, in this most illustrious purport, is exposing the politics of the modern day. the capitalists, the communists, the socialists, the dictators, the democracies, whatever form in which a government takes place, its only value is to the extent that the leaders are accepting the authority of God. And the Brahmins, not simply Brahmins by birth or by caste, but as Bhagavad Gita explains, those persons who are truly exhibiting the qualities of Brahmins, who are peaceful, who are self-controlled, who have an equal vision toward all living beings, who are compassionate, merciful, and especially who are extremely learned in the scriptures and who have received knowledge of the scriptures from the parampara system, which Krishna explains in the Gita, such persons alone are fit to lead humanity. As it is explained in the fifth canto of Bhagavat, Guru na sasyat, swajanina sasyat, pitana sasyat, janina sasyat. Unless one can guide one's dependents or followers in such a way that they never have to suffer birth and death again, one has no right being a guru, a teacher, a political leader or king, or even a parent. Now, those great learned souls who have truly dedicated their life for the welfare of humanity and who care nothing for their own prestige or wealth, they are called Brahmins. A Brahmin is not proud of wearing a 50 paisa piece of string. A Brahmin is humble because he understands that the real wealth, the real riches of life are in devotion to God and not in the temporary treasures of this world. Therefore, he is not interested in material wealth or prestige. He is only interested in service. His only wealth is his service to humanity and the service of God. Such persons, they are truly fit to lead society on the path of dharma. And the king or the ruler can only benefit the citizens in truth to the extent that he is the humble, submissive, obedient servant of the Brahmins. If he is not, he is cheating in the eyes of God. So today we see people are very anxious to give big, big speeches, campaigning to be elected. But what do the people know about what is good for them? The people are essentially ignorant to the spiritual values of life. The masses of people, what do they want? They just want a little sense gratification. They will not elect a ruler who's going to give the high, lofty understandings of the goal of life. They will elect a ruler who somehow or other can convince them that they will get a little better sense gratification. You see, the Brahmins know the goal of life, and they must lead. The Sudras generally do not understand the goal of life unless they have the good direction of a Brahmin. This is the nature of society. Of course, in Kali Yuga, Kalo Sudra Sambhave, everyone is essentially born Sudra. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, I remember he used to say that in America, the theme which is the emblem of democracy, they are very proud of this, is that this is the government for the people, by the people, and of the people. Srila Prabhupada, when he heard this, he says, but all the people are Sudras. That means it's the government for the Sudras, but of the Sudras, and by the Sudras. What do you expect out of such a government? simply everybody promising each other sense gratification and chasing after sense gratification. Therefore, we find in the Vedic times that it was the Brahmins who elected the king, not the common men. But the Brahmins were qualified, and they were selfless. So here we find the Brahmins, after Maharaj Nimi, who was a pure devotee of the Lord, by his own sweet will decided to leave this world. By the curse of Vashishta he died, but by the power of the demigods he was brought back to life. But he didn't care to be in this world any longer. He set by his example that I have done my duties as king. Somehow or other by my karma I left my body, so why should I come back? Now it's time for me to go back to Godhead. So he went back to Godhead. But because his body was of such an auspicious origin, the Brahmins, by their mystic powers, they churned his body. And by the chanting of mantras, by their prayers, and by the auspicious lineage of King Nimi, who they were deriving the body from, a great and exalted king of the name of Janak appeared. So we find here something wonderful, something that appears utterly inauspicious. When it comes into the hands of the great souls, it becomes something most auspicious. The people were lamenting like anything. Such a great ruler as Maharaj Nimi is dead. What will we do? There's no one to replace him. So what appeared to be a disaster became the greatest benediction. Because what greater line of kings is there in the history of the world than the kings of Mithila, Janak Maharaj? This Janak Maharaj, as we will read in the future verses, his great-great-grandson became the very father of the goddess of fortune herself, Sita, and the father-in-law of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ram. So we should never see anything by its external temporary appearance. What appears to be the most horrible and inauspicious event, what appears to be the end of everything, by the grace of God, often becomes the beginning of a new era of transcendental, wonderful Krishna consciousness. There is a similar story, but with a slightly different theme, in the story of King Anga. This is narrated in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. Maharaj Anga was a very great king. He was also coming from a line of great souls. He was a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj. And from the time of Maharaj Uttanapada, all of his descendants were perfect monarchs. They all ruled the citizens in pure devotional service. And Maharaj Anga was no exception. He was such a great and selfless king. He lived and sacrificed his every aspect of life only for the protection and for the welfare of the citizens. And he was a pure devotee of the Lord. He was married to a beautiful king of the name of Sunita. And Maharaj Anga at one time was performing a sacrifice for the benefit of all of the kingdom. And he was offering his shares to the devatas. But none of them would come to accept their portions of the sacrifice. So he was feeling very much disturbed in mind. Why are they not coming? This sacrifice is a failure unless the demigods come to accept. So he consulted with the Brahmins, and they said, Maharaj Anga, we are performing all of our rituals perfectly. All of the mantras have been chanted expertly. There has been no flaw in the performance of this yajna. And Maharaj Anga was thinking, maybe I have performed some sin. And the Brahmin said to him, no. In your entire life, from your birth, you have never committed a sin, nor has even a sin entered into your mind. Then why is it that this sacrifice is not being accepted by the higher powers? They said, because you have performed perhaps some sin in your previous life, you have no son. And without a son, a king is not really qualified to be king, because there's no one to take over after. Therefore, the demigods are not pleased to accept your sacrifice. So what you should do, the Brahmin said, is you should do a special sacrifice for Vishnu in order to gain a son. So he did like that. He performed a wonderful sacrifice for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu. And an effulgent personality came out of the sacred fire with a pot of payasam, milk with the sugar and rice cooked together. And he gave that payasam to Maharaj Anga, who then smelled it and offered it to his wife. Just after that, his wife became pregnant, and a child was born. This child was a gift of Vishnu directly. Of course, it is said that Sunita was the daughter of death personified. And it is said that the grandchild, usually the grandson, generally takes the qualities of the mother's father. This is in the Shastra. But still, it was directly the arrangement of Vishnu. So this child, when born, was named Vena. And he was a very unusual child. When he was just a little boy and he would go out to play with his friends, he would round them up together. And during the course of the game, he would ruthlessly murder them. He would slaughter them in so many torturous ways. His greatest joy in life was to torture others and to kill. He was constantly harassing everyone. And when this child would come to a particular place of the neighborhood, people would cry out, here comes cruel Vena, here comes cruel Vena, and they would all run away. And when he grew up, and his father, who was such a gentle and humble devotee, he was trying in so many ways to discipline this child. He would punish him, he would chastise him, he would try to educate him, he would try to encourage him. He used every possible method to make this child something good. But the more he tried, the more Vena became more and more uncontrollably cruel toward all living beings. He would go into the forest and just begin to massacre innocent animals. He would never have anything nice to say about anybody. He was such a disturbance that Maharaj Anga was in so much anxiety. What am I going to do with this son? He is my only son. One day he began to pray, how fortunate are those great men who have no son. They do not have to suffer the terrible anxiety that I have to suffer. There's no greater curse than having a bad son. Chanakya Pandit said, there are four types of enemies within the family. If a father is in too much debt and dies a debtor, he is an enemy. If a mother takes a second husband before her children, she is an enemy. If a wife is too beautiful, she becomes an enemy. And if a son is a fool and rascal, he is an enemy. So Maharaj Vena was quite a fool and rascal. So Maharaj Anga was just being tortured by his son mentally, physically, socially, everything. He couldn't even sleep at night. One night when he was laying in bed, he was just contemplating. And he was thinking, what great mercy the Lord has given me. This is the most wonderful thing in my whole life, that I have this horrible demoniac son. If I had a good son, I would be so attached to him, I'd never be able to sever the ties of family bondage. But because my son is such a demon and rascal, I have no attraction for my son, for my wife, for my home, for my palace, for anything. I'm completely detached. This is wonderful. This is fantastic. This is Krishna's mercy. The goal of life is not simply to enjoy your family. The goal of life is to surrender to Krishna. Now, my only desire, I can't tolerate any other thought except surrendering to Krishna. So right then, that night, without saying anything to anyone, while his wife, Sunita, was laying sound asleep, he very quietly and secretly left the kingdom, renounced the world, to live the life of a vanaprastha and a sannyasi. And when the citizens woke up the next morning, everyone was looking, where is King Anga? He is the greatest king. He is our friend. He is our father. He is our protector. They looked all around. There were groups of people looking through the jungles and the forests, but they couldn't find him anywhere. And finally, with heavy hearts, tears in their eyes, they all came back. And they realized that he had left without saying a word to anyone. He attained the perfection of life. So Maharaj Anga tried to understand what appeared to be the most horrible circumstance of life. Ultimately, after suffering for some time, he recognized that in truth it was the supreme benediction that God had ever given him in his whole life. The doors to liberation were opened through his son. You cannot judge a book by looking at its cover. You cannot understand a situation by seeing how it appears. This is all the arrangement of Vishnu, who is always the protector and always the well-wisher of his devotee in all circumstances. So then what happened is, poor Sunita, she was brokenhearted, and after Maharaj Anga left, of course, when there is no strong leader, the thieves and the rogues, they just go rampant, and they were just going all over the place, just causing havoc to all the innocent citizens. And the Brahmins, they were lamenting like anything, what to do without King Anga. So the kingdom became so unregulated and unruly that they decided, the Brahmins decided, that we should install Maharaj Vena as king. So they performed the coronation, and he was king. And when he felt the prestige of being the emperor, and he saw the wealth and the power that he possessed, he became utterly intoxicated by false ego. I am the supreme king, I am the conqueror. Of course, on one hand, the rogues and the thieves, the criminals, they were scared to death of King Vena. They had to hide or desert the kingdom altogether. So in that sense, there was good regulation. But Maharaj Anga, he was so proud, he considered that he was the only worshipable person. So he ordered that no longer will any Brahmins be allowed to perform any sacrifices, no longer will any scriptures be read, no longer will any devotional activities to God or the demigods be allowed. I am the sole and exclusive king. And he rode through the kingdom terrorizing anybody who practiced any religious principles. And this was terrible. The people were in complete anxiety. They were constantly in fear of this cruel king torturing, killing, murdering, plundering them. So what happened is the Brahmins, they came together and they decided, let us appeal to the king and deliver transcendental knowledge to him. After all, we are the ones that made him the king. We are the ones that coronated him. He owes so much to us. So let us preach to him. So the Brahmins came to Maharaj Anga, or Maharaj Vena, and first they praised him because they knew that would soften his heart, that you are a great king, you are the descendant of Anga and Dhruva and all of Uttanapada, Swayambhuva Manu, and you are very mighty and powerful, and everyone obeys you. But please understand that the goal of life is self-realization. Without religious principles, human civilization is condemned. After all, the Supreme Lord Vishnu is the Lord of all lords, the God of all gods. And everything we have is coming by his mercy alone. And his deputed representatives, the demigods, they are providing all the necessities for humanity. If we do not satisfy them and please them, then everything will go to hell. And if you do not allow this to be, then your whole name and fame and your life will be ruined, and your kingdom will be ruined along with you. So please, Maharaj Vena, let us lead the people nicely in proper religious principles. And when Maharaj Vena heard this, he became very angry and very upset. He said, you Brahmins, you think you are learned, you are all fools. You do not know what the scripture says. According to the Shastra, the Supreme God and all the demigods are the different limbs within the body of the king. He is the embodiment of all divinity. They are all under his control, under his order. And if you don't obey the king and worship the king as the singular, only worshipable personality, you will all be destroyed by my sword. So hearing this insatiable ego, the Brahmins became very angry and very distressed, and with heavy hearts they came together and called out, we must kill him. So these Brahmins, who are by nature very gentle, followers of ahimsa, nonviolence, very learned, unpolitical, they all came together and they began to chant these high-pitched mantras. And through these mantras, Maharaj Venu was killed. And again, Sunita, she had lost her husband, now she had lost her only son. She was so attached, weeping with tears, she preserved her son's body with all sorts of oils. Meanwhile, the Brahmins left and went to perform their sacrifices. But in the absence of King Vena, again, the criminal-minded people took advantage and the innocent were being plundered. In fact, it is described there were so many rogues and thieves gallivanting throughout the kingdom, the village, the countryside, that there was constantly dust being raised by the running of their feet. So at that time, it is explained, the Brahmins came together and they decided, we have to get a good king. Where will he come from? We should churn the body of Vena, because he still has the auspicious quality somewhere within him of his previous ancestors. So first they churned his thighs. And all the sins of Maharaj Vena, all the sinful reactions and tendencies came out in the form of a personality of the name Bahuka. And then they churned the king's arms. And from the churning of the king's arms by their mystic mantras appeared the most effulgent forms of the partial expansion of Lord Vishnu himself along with Lakshmi Devi. His name was Maharaj Prithu and his wife Arachi. When the Brahmins saw his qualities, they saw the symbols of Vishnu upon his palm. And they understood that this is the most munificent and the greatest of all kings that have ever been. He did not come out as a child, but he came out fully decorated by king. course, the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the glories of the rule of Maharaj Prithu. And the goddess of fortune herself, Archi, always standing at his side. So here we find again what appears to be the most inauspicious condition gives birth to the most auspicious condition. Who was more inauspicious than Maharaj Vaina? But from him was born the Lord himself, Prithu Maharaj. So this is the transcendental arrangement of Lord Sri Krishna. As it is said, the darkest moment comes before the dawn. From what seems the most unlucky, the most horrible, the most unfortunate, and the most inauspicious thing, oftentimes Krishna is born in that situation. After all, Krishna was born in a prison. What is there? Where possibly is it more inauspicious than being in a prison? Krishna took his birth in a prison house, the prison of Kamsa, a demon. Prahlad was born in the womb of a Rakshasi. And Maharaj Prithu took birth from the body of the most terrible, horrible, cruel, and sinful king. At a time when everything was so dark and hopeless. Throughout Vedic history, we find this theme constantly repeating itself. Therefore, for the devotees, they don't even try to evaluate auspicious or inauspicious, fortunate or unfortunate. These are all external things. They simply have faith in Krishna. They simply know that if we are sincere, Krishna will manifest himself without doubt through whatever situation and however it appears. And this is a fact. In all situations of life, wherever Krishna is being remembered, wherever his holy name is being chanted, we can know for sure, 100,000%, that everything will, in the end, be all auspicious. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. Therefore, a devotee is never discouraged, is never disheartened. Whether such a devotee is being glorified or condemned, whether a devotee is being assisted or assaulted, whether a devotee has all facilities or no facilities, as long as that devotee knows that he is sincerely trying to serve his spiritual master and remember Krishna, he has complete faith that this is all Krishna's arrangement, and in the end, everything will be just perfectly the way Krishna wants it, all auspicious. That is the faith of a devotee in every situation of life. His faith never deviates. So, simply always remain true to the desire of Guru Maharaj, and always remember Krishna. And let every situation just be an opportunity for the mysteries of Krishna's mercy to unfold before your eyes. Be patient, enthusiastic, and chant Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? Yes. What? Can't hear him. I didn't say that. When did I say that? If a man is too attached to the beauty of his wife, then the wife becomes an enemy to one's spiritual progress. That's what I said. But we find the greatest saints had such beautiful wives. They weren't attached to their physical beauty. Talk louder. I never said it was sin. This is your nonsense concoction. Where do you get this sin? Nowhere does it say that, nor did I say that. If you become attached to the external beauty of anything, that thing, whatever it is, becomes your enemy. Huh? Unless it's Krishna. Any other questions?